Good evening and welcome to 30 Letters in 30 Days. It is Thursday night. I want to remind everybody that 11 Letters in 11 Days has started. And you can get more information. 11 Letters, they're not a different 11 Letters. They're the same first 11 letters that we learned. But it's a program for those who want to start on Rosh Chodesh, meaning today, until Yud Aleph Nissan. And it's a program that's going to be promoted and it is being promoted in many schools around the world, as well as it's open to anyone who wants to join. Go to 30letters30days.com. You'll get more information over there. Also remember that we're going to have uploaded a little bit later tonight the Shabbos table conversation guide, where you can print it out and bring it to your Shabbos table. And there's a little question for conversation, a conversation starter, basically, based on each of the letters that we learned this past week. So let's jump in, because Thursday nights are Lechem Mishnah. We do, remember, to do 30 letters in 30 days, we have to do a letter every single day. How do you do a letter on Shabbos? Well, we do the Friday night letter Thursday night as a second letter. So we got a long program ahead of us tonight. And the first of the two letters tonight is, it's a heavy letter. Not heavy like intense or anything like that. It's actually, the subject is not overly personal. I mean, we've had letters where the subject matter is dealing with some heavy stuff as far as struggles that people are having in their personal lives. And, you know, that's emotionally heavy. But tonight, it's not intense. It's not personal. It doesn't seem like anyone has a serious problem. Thank God. But it's intellectually heavy. And it's surprising that it's so intellectually heavy, because the subject of tonight's first letter is about a drawing that was used for a children's publication. Who'd have thunk that a drawing used for a children's publication could become the subject of a very deep, erudite discussion? Well, you're going to see it. You're going to see it tonight, and then you're going to, seeing is believing, you're going to understand it. So here we go. Letter number 20. Baruch Hashem Dalad Nissan Tovshin Yud Tes, Brooklyn. Mar Mem Ben Uri Shiyichye. Shalom Uvracha. By the grace of God, the fourth day of the month of Nissan, 5719. It's the spring of 1959. Brooklyn. Mr. M. Ben Uri. Who is Mr. M. Ben Uri? Pray tell. Okay, well, he is Mayor Ben Uri. Mayor Ben Uri was born in Riga, the capital of Latvia, in 1908. His original family name was Vasbutsky, but he later on moved to Eretz Yisrael. He adopted a Hebraic last name. He used the name Ben Uri because of Bezalel Ben Uri. Who is that? That is the artist who implemented all of the commands that Moshe was given in how to build the Mishkan. So Bezalel Ben Uri, he was the architect and the artist who made Hashem's sanctuary. Well, I want to tell you something. Mr. Mayor Ben Uri was an incredibly gifted architect and artist. So his last name was quite fitting. When I say he was a gifted architect and artist, that's somewhat of an understatement. He was incredibly prolific, incredibly accomplished in both fields. In addition, I mean, he was a polymath. He was a true Renaissance man. He was also a gifted musician, and he used to compose canons and complex musical compositions, and obviously the field of mathematics and its overlap with the architecture and the art and the music was a running theme in all of his work. So, and you're going to see this in the Rebbe's letter to him. The Rebbe is writing about these fields on a very, very deep level, as would be befitting Meir Ben Uri, who was an expert in all of these fields and would definitely appreciate this type of discussion. I should mention that he had visited the Rebbe that year, earlier that year. He was visiting New York because he was doing a gallery of his artwork. And while he was in New York, he met the Rebbe. And this letter is sort of a follow-up with the relationship that blossomed after that meeting. Okay. Bisanyinus korosi michtove me'erev reshchedish nisan. Behemshech l'sichasenu be'es bikurei. With great interest, I read your letter from Erev Rosh Chodesh Nissan, which was a follow-up to our visit, meaning face-to-face visit, which we mentioned happened when Ben Uri came to New York. Okay, so after the visit, Ben Uri wrote the Rebbe a letter, and the Rebbe is responding now to that letter. Umisakiv beyuchod behanegeil etzior hashar shalasichis lenoyer. You spent a lot of time, you dwelt on, in particular, meaning to say the letter spoke about many things, but it seems like he focused a lot on the cover art of the Sichos Lenoyer, also known as Shmusin mit Kinder, also known as Talks and Tales. Hamutza la'or ayidei hamalach, that was published by Merkos Lenyone Chinuch. Merkos Lenyone Chinuch is one of the three organizations that the Rebbe began to oversee upon his arrival in America in 1941. There was Kohos, Merkos Lenyone Chinuch, and Machne Yisrael. Merkos Lenyone Chinuch put out a magazine starting in 1941 called Talks and Tales. It was a Jewish children's magazine meant for the masses. It wasn't meant for those who were already observant. It was meant for everybody, even Jewish kids who wouldn't normally be interested in reading Jewish material. And there was a cover. Now, I have here the Talks and Tales, and this is just one book where they include facsimiles of the original monthly periodical. I don't know if people remember from last year's 30 Letters in 30 Days, but if you remember the letter we learned on Purim, the letter to Rabbi Herschel Schusterman, Olo Shalom, the Rebbe mentioned Talks and Tales over there because he told Rabbi Schusterman to use the My Prayer articles that were written by Rabbi Nissen Mindel. I should mention that Rabbi and Mrs. Mindel were the chief authors who were responsible for Talks and Tales, Shmusin. So the Rebbe says there to Rabbi Schusterman that although those articles, My Prayer was an article, later it became a book on its own, but originally it was an article, or it was a feature, a recurring feature in the Talks and Tales. So the Rebbe tells Rabbi Schusterman that although the My Prayer articles are written for children, they're full of really great stuff, and you should use them in your classes with adults. It's a very, very interesting thing there. The Rebbe is saying that this seemingly simple magazine for children is not so simple. And we're going to see tonight from the letter, the discussion of the cover page art is also not so simple. Not simple at all. Maybe we should talk a little bit about Talks and Tales in general before we pull up the cover art. And I did. Oh, I really hope this will work. You know, I'm here in the studio by myself, a lone rabbi. I'm really hoping this is going to work. But let me see here if this does work. Tell me how this... How's that? Did that work? Can you see that picture there? That is the Hebrew. Sichas Lanoyer there. That's how the Rebbe refers to it in his letter to Ben Uri. That's the cover page art. You see that? If you could, did that work? Comment in the chat if that actually worked, because that would be so cool if it did. That cover art was drawn by a 16-year-old. Does that make sense? It was 1940. Because the Talks and Tales began in 41, but I was looking at it, actually. The first whole year of publication, there's no cover art. It's just a text. You can't really see so well, but it's just text. And it didn't start until the first issue of 1942, and then it would have the illustrated cover like this. So the artist who was responsible for this was Michael Schwartz, who was born in the Catskills, and he was born in 1926, so he would have been 16. Now, he was a protege. He was gifted from childhood. In fact, he said, "I can't remember when I first picked up a pencil or a crayon, because as far as back as I can remember, I was holding art implements and making art." So, in fact, he was enrolled in the New York School of Art and Design when he was 13 already. And he was also studying in the Chabad School in Brooklyn. So he came from an interesting background, had an interesting skill set. And, you know, as the Rebbe mentioned in his letter to Finkelstein that we learned a couple weeks ago, Rebbe Mechabed Ashirim, that the leader of the generation has to be a good talent scout. He has to have his eye out for people who have talent. Michael Schwartz went on to become an incredibly successful commercial artist. He worked for some of the big names like Coca-Cola and Ford Motors, and he had an incredibly recognizable style. He had a unique style that everyone in the art world was able to instantly identify as his signature style. But that was all later as he developed into his career. As a 16-year-old kid, he drew the cover art for the Talks and Tales, which, as we're about to find out, every detail of it was instructed to him by the Rebbe. I should also mention, because I think it's cool trivia, Hasidisha trivia, that he was also the designer of the Merkaz Lanyoni Chinuch logo. Yeah, and in fact, later on, he became a big famous corporate logo designer. But in 1944, so he would have been 18 at that point, he designed the Merkaz Lanyoni Chinuch logo. And he continued with Talks and Tales, and he used to do art. He was a regular artist for Talks and Tales. He told a story, actually. This blew me away. He said, he said it blew him away as well. That Ebba was incredibly involved in Talks and Tales and overseeing it. And as mentioned, the writer who implemented it was Rabbi Nissen Mendel. But the Rebbe was sort of like the visionary who came up with and oversaw all the details. And at one point, so the Rebbe was meeting with Schwartz, and he says to him, and he must have been a teenager at the time. Maybe he was older. I'm not sure what juncture this happened. But he wanted him to make art for Curiosity Corner. And the Curiosity Corner is one of the features of Talks and Tales. So the Rebbe was explaining it to Schwartz. He says to him, "Es soll eus sein wie Ripley." It should look like Ripley. You know what Ripley is? Ripley's Believe It or Not. So how the Rebbe knew about Ripley's Believe It or Not, I don't know. But the Rebbe was telling his artist, when you make Curiosity Corner, I want it to look like Ripley. And this was fitting with the whole approach that the Rebbe wanted, that Talks and Tales should be a publication that a Jewish kid who might not read any other Jewish material, he would read this because it was on the level of and used the same style, at least superficially, as the type of content that he was already consuming. So that was the intent of the Talks and Tales. All right, so let's continue here. Umevaker b'shalosh nekudos. You critique 3 points. So the Rebbe is writing to Ben Uri, and he's saying you critique. You spent a lot of time focusing on the Talks and Tales cover art. And you focused on 3 nekudos, 3 points. Okay. Aleph, first point. Matzav va'oifen tzir shnei luchos habris. The design and the style of the depiction of the two tablets. Maybe I'll pull it up while I read this. You know what I'm going to try to do? This is probably reckless of me to even attempt this. But I want to switch the picture to the English one that is closer in. It's more zoomed in on the details. Let's see if this works. Let's see if this works. Ah, did it work? On my monitor here in the studio, it worked. Let me know that it worked. The people who are listening on Spotify tomorrow are going to be missing out on. I'm telling you something. If you're listening to this on Spotify or Google Podcasts or Apple Podcasts, do yourself a favor and go watch the YouTube or go to soulwords.org and watch the video there as well. Okay, so you can see this. So the first point is you comment on Matzav v'oifen tzir shnei luchos habris. The design and the style of the illustration of the two tablets of the covenant. Base, Matzav v'oifen tzir kader ha'aretz, the design and the style of the globe, you comment on. Gimel, tzir piskum rezal al shloshe devarim ha'elim ha'emed teire v'aveda u'gimels chasadim al yedei gimel amudim. You comment on the visualization or visual depiction of the saying of our sages that there are 3 things that the world stands upon, Torah, Avodah Gemilas Chasadim, v'shoyel la'areisai b'ha'amor, and you ask me to comment on the above. You ask me to comment on the above. Okay, so what are the 3 points? You wanted to know about basically the way the two tablets were depicted. You wanted to know about the way the globe was depicted. And you wanted to know about the way these 3 pillars representing Torah, Avodah Gemilas Chasadim, that means Torah study, prayer, and acts of goodness and kindness. You wanted to know about those 3 pillars and the way they were depicted. Okay. You're going to say, Really? This is something that Eva wants to discuss? This is worthy of discussion? Oh, just you wait. You're gonna be surprised about the depth over here. Or maybe you won't be surprised. Okay. Ve'aktim nekuda. So I want to first preface one point. Asher betech muvenes hi gam lechvei day. It is surely understood to you as well. Vehi. A point. What is it? Asher shar ha'omer kvar nisparsim ze shmeine esrei shana. This cover has already been around for 18 years, right? So we said it came out in 42. That was already the spring of 59. So it's been around for 18 years. V'chol moka masher hayachon magia. And wherever this monthly, where this periodical reached, zayse meres ba'artzis abris, ba'aretz, ubetfutzais, whether in America or in the Holy Land or wherever, bepirsim hachi rochav, meaning it was very well publicized. It's not a secret. It's not something that is locked up somewhere and nobody knows about it. This has been all over, literally been all over the world. Asher ze machriach litzadeid al kiyum ashar gam lahabo. This kind of forces us to stick with the design in the future. Be'im ein svaris machrichais es ahefech, unless there's really compelling reasons not to. Ve'sheilolois behechlitz yurei kameshahu ad ato. That would completely preclude using the current design. So the first thing that Eva says to him is, look, unless there's serious, serious issues with this design, we're not changing it. It's been around. Everyone has seen it. This is what they're used to. We're not changing it. Okay. Now, I was thinking about this. And I was wondering why the Rebbe told him this. I could imagine that Rebbe in other scenarios, it would be very plausible to me telling somebody to change something even though it's been around already. Like, it didn't sound to me like the most compelling reason. We can't change it because it's been around for so long and people are already used to seeing it this way. I'm totally making this up, but for some reason I felt like this was a way of softening the blow. This guy, Ben Uri, was a real genius. He was a brilliant guy, and he decided to take time to write to the Rebbe some really erudite critique. It wasn't just some Nudnik coming in and making stuff up. Okay, he's giving an informed opinion. And I feel like that I was sort of softening the blow over here and saying, look, we have compelling reasons just to keep things the way they are. So even if you have some good points, like, we're not going to change it. Okay, unless there's something super problematic about the current design, even if you have excellent points, we're not changing it. That's how I took it. I don't know if that's true. That's just how I took it, because the Rebbe could have skipped that and gone straight into the refutations, the thorough point-by-point refutations of Ben-Uri's critique. But the Rebbe didn't go straight into the refutations. The Rebbe first sort of said, listen, no matter how good your points are, we're not changing it. Okay. Now that Eber goes to point for point explaining why this critique is really not so compelling. Okay. B'ha'ora al rishen rishen. So I'm going to comment in order, in the order that you brought it up to me. Al ma sheher b'michtave, how you wrote it in your letter. Aleph. When we decided to come out with this magazine, it's understood that our inner intent, meaning what were we really trying to accomplish with this magazine? What was the real goal? Hachzokis hayadus was to strengthen Yiddishkeit. Vachdorosa Lelev Hanoyer, Bechol Hadrochim Hafsharim. and to permeate this Yiddishkeit into the heart of the youths in all possible ways. In all possible ways. Shebezeh lo yirak kriyas hakosav, which means not just when they read the words of the articles. Elagam riya reshoyne b'shara yachon shebezeh shtei nekudes. That also just when they glance at the cover image, that should already be penetrating into their heart some type of Jewish messaging. And this can be explained in two ways. You follow what the Rebbe is saying here? The Rebbe is saying the purpose of the magazine is to bring real Jewish ideas and values into the hearts of the youth. And that, obviously, the articles, the actual toichen, the written word in a magazine, that's the main tool that we're using. But every aspect of the magazine can also be, if we're deliberate about it, can also be used as a tool for imparting deep meaning. So even the cover page, it's not just there to be aesthetic. It's not just there to look cool. The cover page is there by design to teach something very specific. Okay. And there's two ways of explaining this or expressing this. Asher yadus ubetuya bepoil zois ameres hatoyrva mitzvah heim inyonim hachi nisgovim vachi nailim bebriya. One thing is that Yiddishkeit and its practical expression, which is Torah and mitzvahs, are the most lofty and elevated matters in all of creation. Uvakotza sheni, but on the other side, on the other hand, she avshele eze inyan mitzias ba'olam mibli shiye meyusad ala Torah v'mitzvah. There's nothing in the world that can exist if it's not based on Torah. You see, it's a shtickle paradox over there. On one hand, the idea that Torah and mitzvahs are above the world. At the same time, there's nothing that can exist in the world that's not based on Torah and mitzvahs. So the Rebbe is saying, we wanted this message, even if it's subliminal, even if it's not written explicitly, we wanted this message to hit the readers right there on the cover. Right there on the cover, this has to somehow resonate with them, even if it's like on a subconscious level. So how did we do this? The hasemel, the symbol, the behiras hachi gdeila, in the clearest possible way, like what symbol, what icon is the most clear? Shel ha-toyra of ha-mitzvah, of toyra and mitzvahs, who, kamuvan, as is understood, shnei luchas habris, the two tablets of the covenant, shezeh yadua gam le'elu shaloi, this symbol is recognizable even to those Jews who never received a Jewish education at all. And the magazine is also intended for them. The magazine is intended for Jews who don't know a lot about Judaism. So we need to come up with a symbol of Judaism that's readily recognizable to even Jews who are fairly uneducated in Judaism. And what is that symbol? The two tablets of the covenant. V'hudgash b'tzir shezeu l'mayla min ha'aretz. And it's emphasized that this is above the earth. Remember we said that we want to convey that Yiddishkeit, Torah and mitzvahs are above, they are the highest thing. So we depict them as being above the earth. You know what? I'm going to pull up the image again. We depict them as being above the earth. Ve'gam me'al l'shamayim, as well as above the heavens. Torah is not just above the earth, it's also above the heavens. Asher kosher l'samlom ba'ofen bahir. It's very hard to depict the heavens in a clear way. How do you depict? Think about it. Inherently, it's challenging. How do you depict that which is abstract? I mean, the heavens means a spiritual realm, which is by definition very challenging to visually depict. So the Rebbe says it's difficult to come up with a symbol for the heavens, except if you use clouds. Like, are clouds the best symbol? Practically speaking, it's the best we can do. You know, we're trying to depict something abstract. The heavens are, and again, the Rebbe said this has to be really easy to recognize. This cannot require any Jewish education to be able to decode. So the clouds are just a really simple universal symbol for heavens. And maybe it's not the best way to do it, but practically speaking, it does the job, and there's nothing that does the job better. Okay? So we wanted to show that the Torah is above the earth and even the heavens. So there you go. You have the Luchos above the earth, as depicted by the globe, and above the heavens, as depicted by the clouds. And now above the Torah is only the Creator himself, may he be blessed, meaning Hashem. Now, you're going to be blown away by the detail here. I'm sure you noticed that little base hay in the corner. Well, now you do. And you're thinking, okay, yeah, sure, base hay, because you're supposed to write base hay on a paper. Yeah, Baruch Hashem. Yeah, that's on everything. No. It's there by exact meticulous design. Shebitzir Ashar, that on the cover art, Merumas, that Hashem is hinted to, Behoesius Baruch Hashem, base hay. The Baruch Hashem is alluding to Hashem. It's alluding to Hashem himself. So you have the Luchos representing Torah above the earth represented by the globe, as well as above the heavens represented by the clouds. And then above the Luchos, you have only Hashem himself as represented by the Beis Hay. And you thought this was kid stuff. Umematalahem, then on the bottom you have Kader HaOretz, the globe. V'kevin shematan Torah hare hoya Bahar Sinai. Now, because the giving of the Torah occurred on Mount Sinai, this part is, the attention to detail, the meticulous attention to detail that is present in every aspect of this design is absolutely mind-boggling. Okay, so geographically speaking, I'm going to bust out my globe. I always keep this globe on my desk. I have this special globe. I have to behave myself because I'm about to get into a subject that I'm obsessed with, and I'm going to try to limit my discussion of this. I got this globe specifically because it spins both directions, because I like to put Eretz Yisrael at the top, because actually everywhere you go from to the land of Israel is aliyah, is ascent. So really, the North Pole and South Pole being on the top and bottom, that's sort of arbitrary. That's the way we're used to it being. That's convention. But really, according to Torah, Eretz Yisrael is on the top. So that's why I have this globe that goes like this, right? All right. At any rate, that looks funny. If you put Eretz Yisrael on the top, it doesn't look like any globe that you're used to seeing. What you're used to seeing is North Pole on top, South Pole on bottom, okay? And this is going to figure later into the letter, all right? What people are used to seeing, North Pole on top, South Pole on bottom. But at any rate, where did Matan Torah occur? It occurred at Har Sinai. Hard for me to see here. Hold on a second. You people on Spotify are really missing out. Got to come over to YouTube for this one. Okay, so there. Okay, my finger right now is on Mount Sinai, more or less. You see? Right there. That's where the Torah was given. So what does the Rebbe say? The Torah was given at Mount Sinai Mitzuyer Hakader Ba'ofen. So therefore the globe, check this out, look at this. The globe is depicted in such a manner, Asher Kav Yosher Ma'oisis Hamures, that you can draw a straight line from the letters Beis Hei, which represent Hashem, Derech Shnei Luchas Habris, straight through the two tablets, which represent the Torah, Yagia Lefi Erech B'Shatach Hahu, and it will land approximately in that spot. Look at that. The way that the globe is positioned, the exact angle and placement of it, it allows that you can draw a straight line from the Beis Hei, which represents Hashem, through the Luchos, which represents Torah, and end up exactly where on what spot? The spot of Har Sinai, Mount Sinai, where the Torah was given. Boom. That's exactly why it's depicted that way. Now, it gets more technical. L'chavono ha'amura bo'oshloishes pratim ha'amurim ba'alachsayin. For the above-mentioned reasons, that's why it's depicted diagonally. It sounds like Ben-Uri was asking, why is it diagonal? He probably had some aesthetic issues with it. Looks funny. It's all crooked. It's diagonal. Why is it diagonal? So the Rebbe says, I'm going to explain to you why it's diagonal. V'loi zeh tachas zeh, and not one beneath the other. In other words, that would look nice and straight. You put one on top, you put one in the middle, one on the bottom, nice straight line. No, it has to be diagonal. Shaharei os tzarech haya litzaya kader ba'ofen shanar lay hurgul by klal uklal. Because if you wanted to have a straight line from the Beis Hei through the Luchos landing on Har Sinai, but you wanted one to be on top of the other, then you would have to change the orientation of the globe. Think about that. If you wanted the Beis Hei to be right on the top, Luchos to be right under them, all centered, and the globe to be beneath them, all centered, the only way you could make a straight line that would land up, I mean, if you did it that way, the straight line would land up on the North Pole. That's where it would end up. The only way you could have both and have the straight line go straight from the Beis Hei through the Luchos and end at the spot of Har Sinai would be to turn. Here, I'll show you good. The only way to accomplish that would be to turn the Har Sinai spot to the top, put it at the top, and then you'd have like the Beis Hei, and then the Luchos, and then the earth, and then you'd have a straight line going straight into Har Sinai there. Well, the Rebbe says he doesn't want to do that because, let's read here, he doesn't want to do that. Shehare os tzarechoye letzair hakadah be'ofen shehanoya lehurgul by klal klal. You'd have to orient the globe in a way that the children are not at all used to seeing. In other words, you'd have to put east on the top and west on the bottom. That's not what we're used to. We're used to north on the top and south on the bottom. But like I said, the whole point of the cover is that it should be understood at a glance. I don't want to do something that's going to, you're going to look at it and you're going to have to say, what's happening over there? It has to be instantly recognizable. So making a globe that puts Har Sinai on the top is just going to look funny and it's going to make it that people can't really recognize what it is right away. So you see here, let's show it again. It's diagonal so that you can get the straight line from the Beis Hei through the Luchos and hit right on the spot of Matan Torah while also keeping the orientation of the globe in the customary way that it's depicted and the way the youth are used to seeing it. Bam. Amazing. Absolutely amazing. Okay. V'oid tam b'zeh. Thought we were done. No, not even close. And there's another reason for this. Another reason for this. Sha'oz lehoya bo alashar ki imchelik mimedinais hayishuv. If you oriented the earth that way, you would not see all of the inhabited lands. You'd be showing a lot of ocean stuff, and you wouldn't be really seeing the lands where at least most of the readers, remember that Ebba said, we're sending this to America, to Israel. So if you would orient it that way and put Har Sinai on the top, so you wouldn't see, look at this, when you put Har Sinai on the top, what happens there? Okay, that's Har Sinai on the top. You're getting just a big Pacific Ocean there with the, what is that, Antarctica? You're getting Antarctica in your face. See, that's putting Har Sinai on the top. But what are you seeing straight on? You're just seeing Antarctica and the Indian Ocean, the Southern Ocean, and the South Pacific. That's not helpful. You know why? And again, this is so deep. We want to depict the settled lands because v'hare akavona lahadgisha teira betokfa b'chol makim u'makim. The point is to depict that Torah is binding in all places. So what do we want to do? We want to depict the globe in a way where you're going to see the lands where the kids live. Look at that. Oh, I see my house from here. Right? So you're going to, a kid is going to look at that. And, I mean, look how careful that is. Whether he lives in Israel or he lives in America or he lives in Europe, he's going to see himself depicted on that globe. South Africa is a little bit below the dip. I think you can't exactly see it. Australia's off the chart. Sorry, Australia. Can't get everything into the map. But the point is we want the lands where the kids live to be depicted on the orientation of the globe to send the message that that Torah, which is represented by the Luchos above, is binding in those lands. Incredible. Incredible. Okay, we're not done. We're not done. Mitam ha'omer, muvin, shahaluches leibo b'matzav yosher. So, for this above reason, it's understood why the luches are not straight. Ki im mutik tzas al atzad, why they are off to the side. Shahare ya'oritz tzricha ha'isa le'amotzim metachas lehem, we wanted the earth to be below them, below the luches. Va'aluches metachas lo'aisius, and we wanted the luches in turn to be below the Oasis base hay. So that's why it all ends up diagonal. It's all very precise. Okay, shall we continue? That was only the first of 3 points. Base, point number two. Ba'arosei letzir kader ha'aretz. Comment you made about the depiction of the globe. Oymed al gimel amudim, it's standing on three Amudim, three pillars, right? And you see there that the first one, if you're reading from right to left, as we do as Jews, is Gemilas Chasadim, which is acts of kindness. And then the middle one is Torah, and the left one is Avoda. And the Rebbe doesn't talk about this in the letter, because I guess Ben-Uri understood this. And I would imagine someone like Ben-Uri would immediately... Ben-Uri, for sure, he was not only an artist and, like I said, he was a polymath and an incredibly educated person. He was a Frum Yid. He was a religious Jew. So he wouldn't have asked about why this was done, but I'm just mentioning it for the sake of completeness. Torah Aveda V'Gemilas Chasadim is the way that it's mentioned in the Mishnah, but in... according to Kabbalah, where we speak about right, left, and center axes, Chesed Gvura Tferes, so Gemilas Chasadim, acts of kindness, is the right axis, and Avoda, which is prayer, is the left. That's why it's compared to Gvura, where you're reaching upward, you're straining yourself with inner discipline trying to reach higher. That's Gevura, and that's on the left. And then Torah, Torah is Tiferes. Torah is the harmonizer, which encompasses all truth. So that's in the middle. Kavam Tzoy. Anyways, he didn't ask about that detail. But what he did ask is why the world is, well, let me just read what he says. Okay. The world is standing on the three amudim. V'shoel, he asks, Shezet tzorech l'teisefes hezbir, alma oimdim ho amudim v'chulu. It's puzzling. The person needs to have it explained to him. What are the amudim standing on? What are the pillars standing on? That's what Ben Uri said. Ben Uri was troubled by that. He said, "Okay, so the globe is standing on the pillars, but what are the pillars standing on?" Let me move my globe. Okay. Let's see what the Rebbe tells him. Hine moving, so it's understood. Sharosi hiba hanegel ledavar ledvar mishnah. Your real comment is about the mishnah. You know what that means? That I was saying, like, you're not questioning my artwork over here. What you're really questioning is what the mishnah itself is saying. Sharei bahashar bo'u betzir divrei mishnah kepshuto. Because this depiction, this drawing, is literally doing nothing else but visually illustrating what the Mishnah says. So if you have a question, oh, the world's on the pillars, but what are the pillars on? Then your question's not on our artwork, your question's on what the Mishnah is saying. But the truth is, even the Mishnah doesn't need to explain this. Sharei kol echad meivin, everyone understands, asher toira avayda gmes chasadim enim amudim gashmiim. Everyone understands that toira avayda gmes chasadim are not physical pillars, ki imuvin ruchni, but rather that it is a spiritual concept. Af shemiz, I love this. Ugh, parentheses. The Rebbe couldn't leave it alone and say that Torah, Aveda, Gemels, Chasadim are spiritual. You know why the Rebbe couldn't leave it alone? Because God forbid you should write something that could even look like it's saying that Yiddishkeit could remain abstract, that it could remain a set of principles and ideals, but it doesn't have to actually be carried out in your day-to-day life, in your actions. The Rebbe is not going to let that impression be made in any way, shape, or form. So in the parentheses, after the Rebbe says, we all know these pillars are not real physical pillars. And then the parentheses, the Rebbe says, af, that obviously the way that we express the pillars is in physical action. Yes, you have to actually do acts of kindness, not just value them as an abstraction. You have to do them. Yes, you have to actually sit and learn Torah, not just say that you care about Torah. Yes, you have to go and daven and put in the sweat to really daven and not just pay lip service to the idea of davening. Okay. V'chol echad yedea. Everybody knows. Asher ha-Torah imedes uba mineisen ha-Torah. Torah stands and comes from the giver of the Torah, Hashem. Ve'ein ze doirish pirush. And this does not require explanation. U'kemei sha-Mishnah Mishtameshes besignin ha'olam oimid. Just like in the Mishnah, it says on three things, it doesn't call them pillars, it calls them things, but it says on three things, the world stands, ha'olam oimid, the world stands. So the Mishnah is comfortable with using that expression, it stands. Ha'mashutav gam la'amida shel davar gashmi, al amud gashmi, which it's depicted here as like a physical pillar upon which something stands. Af shekavanosa lemuvan haruchni va'apnimi shebezeh. Even though the Mishnah is clearly speaking about it in a spiritual sense, it's not saying that there are actual physical pillars called Torah, Veda, and Gemilas Chasadim that the world is physically supported by. And the Mishnah wasn't worried that those that expression would be misunderstood. And you know what proves the fact that the Mishnah wasn't worried that this expression, this metaphor, would be taken too literally? What proves it is that in all of the many commentaries on the Mishnah, and the Rebbe says, and there are many commentaries on the Mishnah, especially Pirkei Avos. It's true. Pirkei Avos there are commentaries on Pirkei Avos that don't have commentaries on any other section in Shas. So there's a lot of commentary on Pirkei Avos. And by the way, I just want to tell you something. If the Lubavitcher Rebbe says that there's not one commentary that addresses this question, I promise you, there's not one commentary. Just on the side, I just want to mention, you might easily miss that one. But basically, the Rebbe is saying, the Rebbe is not saying, but a chassid has to understand that the Rebbe learned every commentary on Pirkei Avos. Not only the Rebbe learned every commentary on Pirkei Avos, the Rebbe remembers what it says in every. No. I'm sorry. The Rebbe even remembers what it doesn't say in every single extant commentary on Pirkei Avos. How you like that? So the Rebbe is saying, you're troubled by this idea. What are the pillars standing on? Nobody's troubled by that. There's not one commentary on Pirkei Avos that deals with that question. Yeah. Yeah. Alma oimdim hamudim. Nobody's dealing with what the pillars are standing on. Gam b'tzir ha'shar lahavdil l'dayti ein kol mokim l'tovas b'ha'amar. And so also on the cover art, there is no place for error. Nobody's going to make this mistake. No one's going to get confused. To the contrary, that I was saying, there's a lot of things we could have done that would have been confusing. We avoided those things. We avoided anything that would not be easily, readily recognizable. But nobody's going to be messed up by saying, oh, what are these floating pillars in the air that the world is resting at? No one's thinking that. Okay. Okay. This paragraph, these two paragraphs, really were fun. I want to thank again Sichas in English for their dedication to this project. We had a nice discussion about how to translate this part. This is really super technical stuff. And as I mentioned, Ben Uri was a very gifted as well as educated artist and architect and a mathematician. So the Rebbe understood who his customers were, and the Rebbe was speaking this guy's language over here. Ben Uri said that maybe you could reimagine the whole premise here, and you could depict Torah Aveda Gemilas Chasadim not as pillars the way you've done, but as the three dimensions. Okay, let's talk about three dimensions. Physical space is generally described by having three dimensions. And that's how Ben Uri was. I don't know what his drawing would have looked like. Doesn't sound like he provided a drawing. It sounds like it was just a letter with words, and he probably described how he might draw it. But he said to the Rebbe, why not depict the three things that the world stands upon, al shleisha dvarim ha'olam oimed, on three things the world stands. So have that be the three dimensions of length and breadth and width. Or length and breadth, breadth is width. Length, breadth, depth. Yeah, length, breadth, depth. Why not do it like that? So the Rebbe is like, okay, let's talk about that. Let's talk about why we can't do that. Milvada share. Oh, did I skip something? Yeah, I did. Coordinates. The Rebbe writes there in English, coordinates. You want to switch it for the three dimensions of length, breadth, and depth. And then each of those three dimensions would represent one of the three things that the world stands upon. Why can't we do that? Hine, behold. First of all, the dimensions of the physical world can actually be depicted with more than three dimensions. You're thinking in Euclidean geometry, where you are looking at flat objects. What about spherical geometry? What if you're dealing with round things? So, yes, there's a convention of defining things as having three dimensions, but the truth is there are much more than three dimensions. It's not just length, breadth, and depth. There's also spherical dimensions. As long as the three dimensions are independent of one another. In other words, that they shouldn't be redundant. You couldn't call something in spherical geometry, and I don't know what I'm talking about here, but it just seems to make sense to me, that, like, for instance, two sides of one, if you have two a radius and another radius, which are really just one diameter, that's not two dimensions, that's one dimension. Even though there are many degrees, 360, and then there's many more than that, but those aren't really additional dimensions. Those are redundant. So as long as they're not redundant, that's how I'm reading that. Oh, and I also want to thank David Taub, the creator of Ichikiduzi. When Sichas in English was having a hard time with this, I said, I got to talk to David Taub. Because David Taub, the creator of Ichikiduzi, who's my brother, my baby brother, he's one of the best guys in the world I know at taking really difficult, abstruse, technical ideas and figuring out practical ways of thinking about them. That's what made him so uniquely capable of taking Chassidus and turning it into a puppet show that people laugh at and don't realize the depth of. So David helped me a lot with understanding this. Ukemavur barucha b'chochmas ha'andasa. And this is explained at length in geometry. V'loy oid. But furthermore, ela shelakama te'olyois yesh lohesef aleihem. There are many purposes for which you would add to the dimensions. V'loy rak maimod revi'i, and I'm not just talking about the fourth dimension, hazman, a little relativity over there. The three dimensions, as we mentioned, are length, width, and depth, and then time itself is called the fourth dimension. But the Rebbe says, I'm not even talking about time being the fourth dimension, but although it is. But what I'm saying to you is, you want to depict these three things as the three dimensions, but the idea of three dimensions is a really arbitrary convention. It's just functional. It happens to work. But it's not really reality. Reality has much more than three dimensions. So the three things the world is standing on, the Torah of Torah Aveda veGemilas Chasadim, that's not arbitrary. That is the fabric of reality. The three dimensions is a convention. There's not really three dimensions. It's just a way that we have of referencing things that's helpful. Okay? So that's not the right thing to use. This because there's much more than three. But furthermore, like the debate in mathematics about this, please, a mathematician, come forth and explain to me the depth of this. I'm struggling just to hover above it and glean any semblance of meaning from this. But what I got from this was, according to mathematics, the idea of coordinates are ways, it's sort of like a system which you impose upon reality in order to describe a reality that's already there. You see what I'm saying? And that's, the Rebbe describes that as, that the thing you're measuring has to exist along those planes. It exists in those coordinates. In other words, that the dimensions are establishing the place of the thing that we're measuring and limit the thing that we're measuring. But not that they are above it. Or not that the object being measured is above it. Actually, I wasn't sure how to read that part of it. What it sounds like it's saying is, and I invite anybody to submit a better explanation. When you have coordinates, basically what's happening is you're superimposing this system within which you're fitting that which you're trying to measure and describe. And therefore, you are defining that thing as existing within that system. The coordinates, therefore, would not be a good way of depicting Torah Aveda Ugmils Chasadim, because, as we said, the world stands upon them. The world stands upon them. It's based upon them. Torah, Aveda, Ugmils Chasadim are not dimensions that can be used to describe and measure the world as it already exists. In other words, Torah, Aveda, Ugmils Chasadim are not arbitrary forms of measurement where you can evaluate and describe various phenomena that exist within the world. No, the phenomena of the world are based upon a system which transcends them. You follow what I'm saying? It's not like, okay. Like Lamashal, and Sefer Yetzirah talks about Elam Shana V'Nefesh, three dimensions of reality. Elam means place, Shana means time, Nefesh means the human aspect or the conscious observer, subjective aspect. Those often are used as dimensions in the way that Ben-Uri seems to be thinking of dimensions. In other words, you can look at anything in the world and describe it from a perspective of time, describe it from a perspective of space, describe it from a perspective of a person. But those are systems for describing that which has already occurred. When you say the world stands upon Torah Aveda Gemilas Chasadim, we're saying Torah Aveda Gemilas Chasadim are not just conventions that are used to describe that which exists, but they are the very fabric from which existence as we know it comes into being and is made. And that's why the three dimensions is just not a good depiction. Are we having fun out there? Over an hour and we're still on the first letter. I want to know if people are still with me. You still with me? You're enjoying this? This is overly technical. I promise you that Meir Ben Uri enjoyed this letter. First of all, I can guess that he would have loved this letter. But I also happen to know that he accepted the answer and he found it to be brilliant. So, and have you ever heard of an artist who got critiqued and he was thankful for it? So that itself is a miracle of the Rebbe. Okay. Let's continue here. Kamuvin kol ze ba kahara noisef ala ikar. Shbechlal ein mokim la omer bashar yarchon le noyar. Shekama sugim boy. It's understood that what I'm saying here is just a parenthetical note to the primary point, which is that in a publication that's meant for all types of kids, like there's no place in the title page for this kind of stuff that is not going to be understood by all of them. Vasher Ruben Bavade loy Yavino Klal Inyan Tsir Ka Omer. And certainly most of them are not gonna relate to an image that you're proposing at all. It's not gonna mean anything to them. Vafilo me'elo de bote sefer tichoini, even those who do go to a technical school, and maybe they do know a little bit about dimensions and stuff like that, it's going to be hard for them to decipher what it's about. Alachas kama v'kama elo shlamat mehem, so much more so those who know less about that kind of stuff. They're not going to figure it out. Ka'amer kavonas inyin ha-nimser al yedei ha-tzir umetarose, and like we already explained, the intention and the function of what's being expressed in the picture, like we said, the point is to have a very clear message about Torah being the greatest thing in the world and yet the basis for everything in the world. And that should be readily understood by Jewish children who have no specific Jewish education. Ki be'im lav hare pogum hu v'choser. And if it's not something that any kid can look at and understand the message of instantaneously, then it is incomplete and lacking. So I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to change it to something that's going to forego that impact. Al pi klal chazal es vohev v'sufa, based on the rule, the general principle of our sages, as vohiv basufa, it's a play on words. As vohiv basufa, it's poetic words from the Torah, but it's homiletically interpreted by the Gemara as there's going to be love at the end. Meaning, when Torah scholars, this is what it says in the Gemara, I think in Kiddushin, that when Torah scholars argue So they may argue, but in the end, they love each other because of their argument. So basically, the Rebbe is saying, you had these critiques for me. I refuted all of them really soundly and thoroughly, and no hard feelings. In fact, this should only make us closer. Tikvasi shelo yakpid al ha'ores. I hope you're not going to be, you're not going to have any hard feelings. V'hein loy bo'u ella lahav hir inyan v'loy l'shem kushim v'cholo. I only brought it up to clarify the matter and not to be confrontational. B'chovedu v'avrocha l'chag Pesach kosher v'sameach, with honor and blessing for a kosher and happy Passover. Yeah, wow. Cover of a kid's magazine. How you like that? just a cute little cover of a kid's magazine. I'm sure there's no deep meaning in it. Yeah, there you go again. By the way, I was speaking to Chaim Shulbrook from Lahak today. And I'm mentioning who I was speaking to because he told me something that if I had heard it anywhere else, I would have said, it's a little far-fetched. I don't know if I'm comfortable repeating that. But Chaim Shul told me I'm comfortable repeating it. He said that Avram Perish said, I'm laughing, but I don't think he said it to be funny at all. He said, so Chaim Shul said, Avram Perish, the chassid, said, he was a chassid going back to the times of the Rebbe Rashab. Okay, he'd been around the block, is what I'm saying. He said, as talks and tales is the samech vav von unser der. You hear that? You understand? Samech vav is hemshech samech vav, tofshech samech vav, 5666. The series of very deep discourses from 1896 from the Rebbe Rashab. And it's considered a foundational, groundbreaking work in explaining the ideas of Chassidus. So he said, talks and tales, die Samach Vov von unser Deir. You get what that means? Our generation's Samach Vov is talks and tales. And I don't think he meant that in any type of derogatory fashion. To the contrary, I think what he was saying is talks and tales is not kid stuff. It's not kid stuff. And by the way, I want to mention something. You know how people are always looking for stuff to read and they're buying these magazines and why don't you get yourself a set of talks and tales? You can get the whole 50 years of talks and tales. Set like this. In fact, I just checked it out. There's a sale at Kahus right now. I want to encourage everybody. Can we pull this up? Where's the? Just want to see. Where's the link? Okay, I have the link here. I'm gonna put it in the YouTube chat. Here's the YouTube chat, the link. All right, you see that right there? I just put it in the YouTube chat. That is the link for buying your own copy of Talks and Tales. It is on sale right now. It's usually $374. It's on sale for $300. I think at checkout, the discount will show. So I want to encourage you that if you need something that the kids can read and the adults can read and your house guests can read and that you can read, why don't you get Talks and Tales and keep it around? And you'll be filling your house with more depth and meaning than any of us can possibly comprehend. Because just from this one letter, I think we now appreciate that in the details of this publication, there is deep, meticulous messaging and beyond what we're capable of understanding on our own. So from just this description of the meaning of the cover art, you can go and extrapolate how much meaning must be densely compacted into every single page. And also you should know, again, since this is a whole Yud Aleph Nissen Hachana, we're doing this to prepare for the Rebbe's birthday. So I'm sure everybody who is learning this is concerned with doing things that the Rebbe cares about and bring fulfillment to the Rebbe. So I want to tell you something. Talks and tales is something that I'll just tell you with a story. This is a story that was repeated by Yossi Goldstein, all of Shalom, Uncle Yossi, whose Yahrzeit was just, I think, last week. He said he was a Bacher in the 40s, in the 1940s, and this is before the Rebbe became Rebbe. He heard the Rebbe talking to Shalom Mendel Simpson and saying, what's going on here? The talks and tales have to be mailed out, and nobody's coming to deal with the mailing, and I myself am stapling them and stuffing the envelopes. And am I going to have to bring them to the post office as well? So Uncle Yossi, who was a Bacher at the time, he hears this, and he hears the Rebbe at that time, you know, the Ramash, the Rebbe's, the Friedrich Rebbe's son-in-law, is saying that he's spending his time stuffing envelopes so that the talks and tales mailings should go out in time. So Yossi Goldstein comes in and says, I'll do it. And he didn't want to disturb the Rebbe, so he said, I'll take them to my room, I guess to his dorm room or whatever. And the Rebbe was like, no, don't worry, do it right here. You know, don't bother taking it somewhere else, do it right here. And then that became his job. And so he said he was able to spend a lot of time in the presence of the Rebbe, because he would come into the Rebbe's room and pack stuff, talks and tales envelopes. Yeah, pretty amazing. Speaks for itself. Okay, so letter number two for tonight. Someone's asking, is there a code for the discount? No. It's automatic. The sale should be automatic. I think it should apply in the checkout. You'll let me know. Okay. So, second letter for tonight. Second letter for tonight is short. Here we go. Letter number 21. Wow, can you believe it? We're completing now basically 3 weeks. Yeah, Matzah Shabbos will be the beginning of our fourth week. Amazing. Okay. Baruch Hashem Vav Nissen, Tavshin Yutes, Brooklyn, Bracha V'Shalem. Blessings and greetings. By the grace of God, 6 Nissen, 5719, Brooklyn. Blessings and greetings, which means that I was writing to a woman. And as we've had a couple of times already, when the Rebbe is writing to a woman, the Rebbe writes in Yiddish. And the Rebbe is writing about motherhood in this case, about this woman's children and her duty toward these children. Let's look. In Enfer of Ayabriv von 4.13, in answer to your letter from 4.13, meaning April 13th. Be'ez rotzen vet men mazke sein die alle wegen welche ihr schreibt auf dem Zion HaKadosh von Kveid Kedushas Meir Vechami Admor Zecher Tzadik Bekodesh Levroch El Chayelim Haba Nishmasi Begins Mirem Zuchusse Yogen Aleinu Jedren zu dem, was nötig sich Leut Eire schreiben. At an auspicious time, I'm going to mention all of those that you list in your letter. I'm going to mention them all at the aisle, at the resting place of my father-in-law, each for their individual needs, as you have written. Es wundert mir. I am surprised, confused. What's up with this? Was wie es zet ois von eier Brief. It seems, appears from your letter, denkt ihr, you think, in other words, you are laboring under the impression, as erziehen gute jiddische Kinder ken men sich banugnen mit geben lernen in a Talmud Torah und praven a bar mitzvah, that it's enough in order to raise good Jewish children that you put them in a after-school Torah study program, a Hebrew school, Talmud Torah, and get them a bar mitzvah. In other words, the woman probably was reporting to the Rebbe, like, I want to have children who are good Jews, and therefore I've done what I needed to do, and I've put them in a Talmud Torah, and we're going to make sure that they have a bar mitzvah. And the Rebbe is saying, I'm surprised that you seem to be under the impression that that's enough, that that is going to be sufficient to accomplish what you want to accomplish. Selbstverständlich. It is self-understood. Ist das sehr weit von genug. This is far from enough. Und jüdische Erziehung darf sein euch noch bar mitzvah. You have to continue after bar mitzvah. Jewish education has to continue after bar mitzvah. Perhaps, I mean, it sounds like one of her children maybe just had a bar mitzvah or is about to have a bar mitzvah, and she's sort of like celebrating that accomplishment as if it's like, hooray, we did it. And the Rebbe is saying, no, we're just getting started over here. Nit weniger wichtig wie vor bar mitzvah. And what you do after bar mitzvah is no less important than what you do before bar mitzvah. This is really, I mean, this is 1959 in Brooklyn. You know, this is really the American Jewish attitude that, what is Jewish education? Jewish education is, I'm going to use a dirty word, a bar mitzvah factory. You know the old joke. Oh my goodness, don't make me torture you with the joke that every rabbi has told. Okay. You know the joke about the synagogue that had mice? Don't worry if I tell it wrong. I'm not telling it to be funny. The synagogue had mice. And I don't know, maybe some other place had mice. They called an exterminator. They couldn't get rid of the mice, blah, 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 blah. Finally, the rabbi comes. Rabbi, you're a rabbi. And we want an exterminator. No, rabbi says, don't worry. I'll take care of your mice. My contempt for this joke is probably apparent. At any rate, get ready for the massive punchline. Then the mice disappear. And the guy's like, Rabbi, you did it. You got rid of the mice. And they never came back. How'd you do it? And the rabbi says, easy. I bar mitzvahed them all. And now they'll never return. Yeah. At any rate, but the joke exists for a reason. It's a little piece of cultural commentary, which is that, you know, modern American Jewish culture was really, really focused on this idea that, of course, you have to have Jewish education. And what is the goal of Jewish education? A bar mitzvah. That you should be able to get to that milestone and you should say, today I am a man. Yeah. The Rebbe is saying, look, it's good you want to focus so much on Jewish education before the bar mitzvah, but it's no less important to focus on the Jewish education that happens after the bar mitzvah. Und der Rebbe muss man lernen in a yeshiva. That's why you have to learn in a yeshiva. Like, it's very nice, mom. You got your kid to go take Jewish classes and be ready to do his parsha or whatever else he did for his bar mitzvah. That's great. But you know what it's time for? Now, it's time to send this kid to a yeshiva. When a meidel darf lernen in a Beis Rivka school or the Beis Yankiv. And a girl goes to a girl's Jewish school, like a Beis Rivka or a Beis Yankiv. Und durch dem... Und durch dem beseitigt man viele Schwierigkeiten und Trouble in die späteren Jahren. And through that, you are going to avert, in future years, a lot of problems, a lot of troubles. You're going to send your kid to yeshiva? It's not a cure-all. No, we're not telling you that it's the fix for every problem, but it's the fix for a lot of problems, and you're going to avoid a lot of trouble if you send your kid to yeshiva. Sei für die Kinder und sei für sich. You're going to save yourself a lot of problems, both for your kids and for yourself. Und wie stark streng man soll das nicht ausdrücken in Wörter. And no matter how forcefully we attempt to express this in words, is das nicht genug in Vergleich zu der ernster herzwichtige Neutigkeit von das Fortsetzen jiddische Erziehung wie oben gesagt. This doesn't compare, doesn't even begin to compare, meaning no matter how forcefully we express this with words, it doesn't even come close to adequately conveying the seriousness and the importance of the need to continue Jewish education, as said above. This is no joke. Und wie bald ihr der Mund nicht wegen eurer Boy und Mädele. Because, or since, you don't mention anything about your boy, your son, or your daughter, was für Erziehung sie bekommen, what type of education are they actually receiving? Gefinde ich für mein Pflicht, zu betonen das eben gesagt. I therefore find it to be my duty to emphasize this. I guess she omitted anything. Like, she didn't say that they were going to go to a Jewish school. So that I was saying, since you're not mentioning anything about it, I'm assuming that you need to have your attention drawn to it. And that's why I'm pointing it out. Und noch mehr stärker und ernster das eben gesagte. And I feel like it's my duty to point it out much, much more strongly than I already did. Und wenn man will auf Emes, and if you really want it in truth, I think the woman, it sounds like she said to the Rebbe, oh, I want my kids to be good Jews. So the Rebbe is like, working with her, like, using that as leverage. Like, okay, you want your kids to be good Jews? Yeah, this is what you're going to have to do. And here's the deal. You want it? Okay, fine. You got to really want it. And if you really want it, if you want it with an emes, wirkt man ein auf sich, auf die Kinder und auf den Mann schichje. This is going to affect you yourself, your kids, and your husband, may he be well. Okay? In other words, don't tell me you're not sure your kids want to go to such a school. And maybe your husband doesn't want it. Maybe you're not sure if you want it. You know what? You want your kids to be good Jews? Great. So really want that. And then your desire for that to happen is going to have an influence. It's going to have an effect. And the family's going to get on board. I should mention the word here from the Rebbe. Isha kshera oisarotzen baila. Chazal say, Ezo isha kshera, who is a fitting wife, good woman, oisarotzen baila. She does her husband's will. So that's the simple reading. The Rebbe reads it, oisarotzen baila, the word oisa, or the infinitive is la'asois, can mean does, but it can also mean to make. To make. So, Ezu Isha Ksheda, who's a fitting woman, Ha'oisar Tzain Baila, one who is capable of making her husband have a will. It's very deep. That's what the Rebbe explains. Not just she makes him do what she wants. No. She makes him want it. The way she's able to do it is because women are malchus, and malchus is actually rooted in keser, which is rotzein, and therefore it can influence the entire seder eshtalshlus from chokhmah on down, and it can steer the seichel in midos. But at any rate, so the Rebbe tells this woman, if you really want it, it's going to happen. Und Hashem yisbarach zol helfen. Hashem should help. The merit you're going to have by doing what we said, meaning put your kids in a full-time Jewish school after Bar and Bas Mitzvah. Yeah, so that's schus. Zu einwirken auf die Kinderschirche, zu anhalten und versetzen jüdische Erziehung, wird beistehen Eich und Eiermann Schirche, zu haben zusammen jüdischen Naches von sei allemen. This is going to assist you and your husband to have yiddish naches from all of your kids. This chos of doing the right thing. Bivrocha zu gute besuris und zu akosher freilchen Pesach, with blessings that you should report good news and that you should have a kosher and happy Passover. B'shem Kvit Gizuz Ad Mushlita Mazkir, signed by a member of the Secretariat. Okay. Good Shabbos.